Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Winning's hard. Really, really hard.
Well, if you're waiting on Sark's statement win, you're going to have to keep on waiting. Texas falling to number four, TCU 17-10, despite being a touchdown favorite, despite being at home, despite having every recruit in the state of Texas there, even College Game Day was there. Even Justin Tucker was there, Westcott, but the offense did not show up. A devastating loss for Steve Sarkisian and the Longhorns.
Yeah, winning is hard when you can't get anything going offensively, especially on the ground. Frustrating day for Bijan Robinson in the running game. Only 12 carries for Bijan, 29 yards, 2.4 yards per carry for him, 2.8 yards per carry for Roshan Johnson. Texas on first downs really struggled running the football. 10 rushing attempts on first down, 2 yards per carry, and you know, that kind of thing, especially when you add in your quarterback having 22 incomplete passes. Texas ended up in a situation where they went 1 for 13 on third downs, average down and distance to go, 10.3 yards. 9 of those 14 third downs were 9 yards or more. Texas didn't convert a single one of those. 3 for 10 passing for 25 yards for Quinn Ewers on third down. Really a mess for the offense when they finally were able to get things going in the second half. 2 red zone drives, only came away with 3 points. And, you know, we talked about last week how important it is to be able to score touchdowns in the red zone. Texas couldn't do that. And for as well as the defense played, a couple of mistakes ended up being the difference in the game.
Texas haven't scored a touchdown offense since the Iowa State game. Only touchdown Texas put up was a fumble, courtesy of Max Duggan. The second half, if not for that, it would have been, wouldn't have been 17-10. The game would have been over with a lot earlier before that. So Westcott, what is wrong with the Texas offense?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it was kind of strange in this game. You know, Sarkisian has been so good with his opening script, coming out, being able to score early in games. He struggled to make those second half adjustments previously, leading to those struggles that you just mentioned, and that, you know, certainly been a major theme of this season and even going back to last season. You know, I think, you know, what really happened in this game was that TCU sold out even more than some of the other teams that Texas faced recently to be able to stop the run. The safeties were coming down really aggressively. The Texas offensive line wasn't really able to get to the second level and deal with the TCU linebackers and able to create any space. That put Texas in a situation where, you know, they really needed to either do what Sark did in the second half and spread out a little bit more, stop trying to play it in a phone booth with some of their heavier personnel packages, run from, you know, tight bunch formations. They're able to get the ball out on the perimeter. Jordan Whittington had some success in that. They were able to find Jatavion Sanders at times. But, you know, really what ended up happening in the first half, and especially early in the game, Quinn Ewers started 0 for 7 through an interception on his 8th pass. Just not enough early in the game that made things easy for Quinn Ewers. You know, with TCU really playing one-on-one coverage, they were inviting Texas to try to take shots down the field. Once again, Quinn Ewers wasn't able to connect on those. I thought Xavier Worthy looked like he was even more frustrated in this game than he has been in some recent games. Had a pass early that I don't think he really went all out for, trying to catch over the middle. He had another pass. I think it might have been about the seventh incompletion from Ewers or so, maybe the fifth or sixth. Called the slot fade, trying to get one of those plays down the field. Allowed, Josh Newton to just, the TCU cornerback, to just body him towards the sideline. And, that was a pass that I thought Quinn actually delivered pretty well. It was a catchable ball, unlike a lot of the throws downfield that Ewers has been making that, just haven't even really been in the vicinity of where Worthy just didn't fight for his positioning, and the ball ended up hitting pretty close to him. And so I think he's got to be able to keep his frustration in check and keep playing hard during games. I thought there were some throws that were straight up dropped, some combination of just some inaccuracy from Quinn Ewers. He had, the one that Worthy didn't go up for, he was just a little bit happy with his feet. The first throw of the game, he had an extra hitch. The ball was late coming out, just a little bit underthrown and got broken up. I thought the one to Sanders, he threw it back at the top of his drop when Sanders was wide open enough that he could have taken a hitch to get him in rhythm, threw it low. That was trying to come off the goal line. Sanders, normally comes up with that play, but, that should have been, probably a 30, 40 yard gain that would have, flipped the field, maybe allowed Texas, to get a little bit of momentum offensively. There are a couple other drops, the similar issue of just not having enough depth at the wide receiver position. Only a couple targets for other guys. Tariq Milton had a target. He caught the ball out of bounds. Jaleel Billingsley had a target that he dropped. Otherwise, the only guys that had catches were Sanders, Whittington, and Worthy. And so, I think some of this conservatism and playing heavier personnel packages and really wanting to compress everything right on the ends of the line of scrimmage, outside of those Texas tackles, is really a result of just the lack of diversity available for Steve Sarkisian, with the lack of depth at wide receiver, the lack of contributions from guys like Billingsley and Gunnar Helm in the passing game, and that's really just not making Texas a very dynamic offense. And so I think it's sort of a hard thing. I've been spending the last couple of days like trying to wrap my head around this, with a redshirt freshman quarterback, with the youth on the offensive line, even some at the skill positions. Jatavion Sanders isn't a guy that's played a lot, sophomore. Xavier Worthy, also a sophomore. Sark has produced some impressive results given the deficiencies of this offense, but I thought he was way too slow to adjust in this game. He didn't have a good game plan coming into it. I think I didn't see exactly what Rod Baber said, but I saw it paraphrased. And he was talking about, Sark's ability as a play designer is really strong. But his ability, as a play caller, is often really lacking, especially with his creativity, in the second half of games. And, I think that's something, to watch moving forward, because it's a difficult load to be able to be the play caller and then still manage the other aspects of the program that are necessary to be a successful head coach at this level.
Are you worried about Quinn Ewers?
I am a little bit worried about him. Yeah. I think that he needs to clean up his footwork a little bit. I think, especially for guys who have a lot of arm talent, who are young, I think that can be difficult for them, because it's easy, to just default into some of the off platform throws when it's not really necessary. He has some issues with, the ball sailing on him a little bit. I'm not sure if that's as much with his footwork. It's just something where he doesn't have a lot of margin for error when he drops down with some of the sidearm deliveries and that kind of natural low arm slot that he likes. And I didn't think that he really responded particularly well mentally in this game. And, that's kind of been a trend where there's been a steady deterioration of his performance over the last few weeks. And, you know, Kansas has, frankly, has a bad defense. They're opportunistic, creating turnovers. But I think, you know, this is a game where, you know, he really needs to get right. Or, you know, I think Steve Sarkisian really needs to think about, you know, giving Hudson Card a chance if viewers, you know, is struggling and doesn't show, you know, the resiliency that he needs to bounce back. You know, I think the expectations for him, you know, in general, and especially after his strong start, you know, the way he played against Alabama, the way he played against Oklahoma, maybe, you know, a little bit unfairly high right now because of his talent. And, you know, he's still young. He still missed a lot of reps. There's the deficiencies in the offense that I mentioned. He's in a system where, you know, he doesn't have as many options on a lot of plays. You know, you look at a lot of these shot plays, you know, to Xavier Worthy, you know, a lot of times, you know, that's really his main read. And then there's maybe one other player in the route tree because, you know, Texas is max protecting, you know, trying to avoid sacks. And, you know, I think they may have to, you know, take the training wheels off a little bit and be able to rely, you know, on the offensive line to hold up a little bit better. Certainly, you know, they've done that pretty well on the edges. But Cole Hudson, you know, had a tough game, lined up across a good player and Dylan Horton. You know, he got beat on that first sack early in the game. You know, he had some other struggles, and that's a situation where, you know, maybe a running back can help, but, you know, the running back, you know, coming in and trying to slow a 300 pounder that just beat one of your guards is not really, you know, particularly helpful. Like, Max Protect doesn't do very much, you know, to give you a better chance to complete some of those plays. So, you know, I think Quinn Ewers really needs to show some mental toughness in this next week. And, you know, I think he needs to be able to settle down better in games. And, you know, these, for all of the, you know, praise that he's really received from, you know, from Sarkisian for, you know, being even keeled and not getting too high or too low, I thought that his confidence and just the way that he was carrying himself, the look on his face late in the game, you know, I think it really cratered against TCU.
You think about his high school at South Lake Carroll. This is a good point that one of the other Burn Origination writers brought up, was he didn't face a lot of adversity, right? He's been in the same system probably since seventh, eighth grade, a dominant powerhouse program, a lot of blowout victories where he didn't have to have the team. He didn't have to put the team on his back, right, and carry them to the wins. So this is really the first time as a quarterback on any level he's had to do this. And his last three games compared to the first four games, if you want to include the Alabama, he hadn't had more than 10 incompletions. The last three games, he has. His completions percentage has not gotten above 58% in the last three games. He's starting to have a lot more adversity, a lot more trouble. And you brought up a good point with just how he looked at the end of that game. He looked shocked, right? He couldn't believe how bad he was playing. And I think it's important to remember that it's on the coaching staff, right, to help develop Quinn, to help him through this. He's still technically supposed to be a true freshman this year, right? He's only played in 6-7 games at the college level. He's still working through all the kinks and the growing pains, but your quarterback can't start out 0-7, right? You got to find a way, I think, for Sarkisian to get him more into a rhythm early on. Now, you can point out, well, Worthy had a drop on either the first or second possession. Sanders had a drop. That's part of the 0-7. The interception, I don't know if that was more on just how he floated that ball or just a bad read. But Sark said something today that I thought was interesting, where he was asked about all the deep shots and why they can't connect and the viewers should stop throwing them. And Sark was like, well, actually, that's what the play is designed to do. But you brought up the route tree and how Texas, if you notice, they're always in max protect here, right? So you have two receiver routes. And a lot of the time, the defensive line had a lot of trouble against TCU. So I think it's on the coaching staff here to help Quinn through all these growing pains. Now, leading into that, Wes Scott, do you think Hudson Card should get any playing time going forward or even in the game against TCU?
I think there's a pretty strong argument that there's definitely an argument that Card should have had a chance against TCU. You know, I think against Kansas, you know, like I said, if Quinn is going to struggle the same way that he did against TCU, I think, you know, you have to put Card in. But, you know, the first thing that that Sark has to do is give him, you know, give him a pass that he can complete and have him flip it out, you know, run, you know, a run pass option. So if TCU is, you know, coming crashing down on the run, then he can flip it out, and then Texas can get some easy yards on the perimeter as an extension of the running game. And just, you know, much too slow to do that. I'm not sure why, you know, it took until the second half to make that. I mean, that's a pretty simple, basic adjustment that a coach who's as well regarded as an offensive mind as Steve Sarkisian should be able to make much earlier.
I wonder if he has anyone on the sideline or up in the booth, anyone that can come to him during the game and say, hey, this isn't working, or we should try this. Kind of, I don't know how much Gary Patterson is involved with Pete Kwiatkowski, and maybe the media and the fans overhype it. But, you know, I see Patterson on the sideline, right? And there's some communication going on with PK, and I'm sure he's helping PK out. And look how great the defense has played. But for the offense, is there anyone Sark has that can talk to him about these adjustments? Because, like you mentioned, I mean, once Texas started going out to the boundaries and hitting J-Wet, it was like, oh, that's right, we do have Jordan Whittington. I mean, Quinn only had three completions to three different receivers. TCU had 10. If you want to include Max Duggan after he threw the ball off of Devondre Sweat and caught it, it's 11. But 10 compared to three, and we talked about it all season long with the deep plays and how the shots aren't working and how yours hasn't, you know, doesn't have a connection with anyone outside of Sanders and Worthy. But it feels like the last three games, Westcott, instead of progressing as a quarterback, Quinn is regressing. And I'm curious how much of that is on Quinn and needing to clean up his footwork, and maybe there's just too much going on for him at the moment, compared to the coaching staff needs to help him out a little bit more.
Yeah, I think after an offensive performance like that one, you know, against TCU, I mean, 44%, you know, completion percentage for Quinn, there's enough blame to go around. And, you know, I believe that it's AJ Milwee, the quarterback's coach, who's up in the box. So, you know, he would be the guy that, you know, the eye in the sky that needs to identify those type of things, share that with, you know, with Sark. You know, I'm not sure, you know, how much ability and how, you know, how strong Milwee is at doing that type of thing. He did spend a few years as the offensive coordinator at Akron before he got hired as an offensive assistant at Alabama, where Sark met him. You know, he was one of the youngest coordinators and, you know, in FBS at the time of his hire. He was let go after the 2018 season. You know, so there were, you know, at least some growing pains for him. But, you know, for as simple as some of these adjustments that we're talking about making, that's, you know, something that Milwee needs to be able to identify and convey to Sarkisian if he's, you know, the guy that has that, you know, perspective to be able to notice those things.
We're one more bad half away, I think, from Hudson Card having to come in. At least not even as the starter going forward, but, you know, just give Ewers a break, because sometimes quarterbacks need that, right? They just need a series or two off. We see it all the time at Clemson. I mean, that was pointed out after Klubnik came in. That's what Texas fans were hollering after the Oklahoma State game. If he's not getting any better, I don't see why you wouldn't turn the Hudson Card in. It seems like maybe it has to do with last season's quarterback controversy with Casey Thompson and Hudson Card, and maybe Sark was, you know, maybe Sark made some mistakes through that, and now he's trying to overcorrect himself with this quarterback situation.
Yeah, you know, certainly things didn't, you know, play out in an ideal fashion last year, having to bench Card, you know, after that game, you know, in Arkansas, the second game of the season. But I think, you know, the thing is that, you know, Hudson Card played at a you know, pretty high level when he was in early in the season, when Quinn was hurt. And so, you know, I think the improvement that he showed and the competency that he showed, you know, especially in, you know, being pretty efficient, being able to create passes, you know, again, he wasn't a guy that was, you know, hitting the deep ball either. So, you know, bringing Hudson Card in probably doesn't, you know, fix that particular problem in the Texas offense. You know, the real limiting fashion, the real limiting element of the offense that's, you know, allowing opponents to really load the box and be able to, you know, take away the run. You know, against TCU, it was in, you know, it was throughout the game, and other games, it's been more largely in the second half. But yeah, I think definitely something this week that, you know, that maybe, you know, giving Card, you know, a few reps with the first team offense this week in practice, just to ensure that if he does go in the game that, you know, it's fair to him and that he's actually prepared to play.
How impressed were you with the Texas defense on Saturday?
The Texas defense was phenomenal. You know, from just the first play of the game, I mean, just a number of really impressive performances. And, you know, overall, Texas had 14 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. That's the most sacks that they had since, I believe it was the 2019 game against Iowa State. So several years since they've had that many sacks in the game. They're getting just a ton of pressure on Max Duggan. And I thought that really, you know, made him a little bit jittery in the pocket early in the game. You know, some really just incredible individual performances. DeMarvian Overshone was great. 11 tackles, half sack. Jadae Barron was really dominant on the perimeter, almost single-handedly took away everything that TCU was trying to do with their perimeter screen game to their wide receivers, trying to get Darius Davis the ball, really dangerous playmaker with, you know, really legitimate track speed for the Horned Frogs. Barron had 3.5 tackles for loss, had the fumble recovery and the scoop and score there that gave Texas a little bit of hope late. Barron Sorrell, 11 tackles as well, tied with Barron and Overshone for the lead. 1.5 sacks for him, 3 total tackles for loss. Jalen Ford, 9 tackles, half tackle for loss. Ogie Oghofu, half tackle for loss, half sack, 2 tackles for loss. Ryan Watts, 2 tackles for loss and a sack for him. He was really dominant on the perimeter once again. You know, just a lot of really good performances for Texas. Strong performances on special teams as well. Keaton Crawford had a blocked field goal early in the game that was worth 3 points. Strong tackles on kickoff return coverage and punt return on Davis. Again, really dangerous in those phases as well. Unfortunately, you know, they came, you know, close to blocking a couple punts. And, you know, I think the TCU punter came into the game. I don't know if this was something that Sonny Dykes was talking to his punter about, but man, that dude was going down like he was shot after he was kicking those punts. And, you know, I wasn't able to really tell on the broadcast, but you know, I thought there's some chatter about Sonny Dykes really working the officials after some of those. And, you know, so they try to go for that punt block late in the game. TCU punter straight up flops on it, ends up kicking DeMarvian Overshone in the head with his plant leg, which was, you know, kind of demonstrating that, you know, he certainly had enough room to come down and certainly wasn't, you know, roughing the kicker. Just, you know, ridiculous call from the officiating crew, but, you know, just some just, you know, completely garbage Bush League maneuvering by TCU to try to pick up those calls. I really don't have any respect for that at all, but it paid off for him late.
There was a flag earlier in the game for, I believe it was not called, but almost was running to the kicker, right? And ended up being a penalty on Texas, but it was holding on the punt return. So they came close. He came close to drawing that flag the entire game.
Yeah. And that one was the right call. Keaton Crawford kind of crashed into him.
Yeah.
Like that one. And you know, that time, I mean, he was the same way he was going down, but you know, that was definitely running to probably, you know, legitimate argument that it was actually roughing the kicker. So just kind of I thought, you know, Demo came close to blocking that punt, but you know, with how that punter was going down all game, I think it was just too much of a risk for Texas. Not really a huge fan of that call from Jeff Banks.
Yeah, and what hurt was TCU would go on and score off a blown assignment to go up 17-10, and that was pretty much, 17-3, which was pretty much the dagger in the game, despite, I thought, one of the best defensive performances from a Texas defense since the Alabama game.
Yeah, you know, certainly one of the best against an extremely good offense. That's a really good TCU offense, really balanced experience. You see the explosiveness from Kendari Miller. You know, Diamante Tucker-Dorsey didn't really scrape on that play effectively to get into that outside gap. Jaron Thompson took an awful angle, ended up running himself into a wide receiver. I think maybe Savion Williams, who was blocking Ryan Watts. Then Miller was off to the races on that 75-yard touchdown run. You know, it looked like there's a miscommunication between Terrence Brooks and Anthony Cook on that Quentin Johnson touchdown that you're referencing after the roughing the kicker penalty that extended that drive for TCU. Just a huge play in that game. But, you know, with Deshaun Jameson out with the concussion, I thought Terrence Brooks played really well. You know, considering, you know, he looked really lost in the spring game. He got passed by, you know, Austin Jordan when Austin Jordan came on in the summer. But I really didn't notice Brooks at all in coverage. I thought he played, you know, a really strong game. That's good for Texas, you know, to have him come on. I think Austin Jordan needs a little bit more time to develop. But, you know, Brooks, one of the most talented players in the class, huge flip from Ohio State last year on early signing day. You know, the other thing defensively that I thought, you know, was a little bit frustrating in the midst of a really strong day from Barron. You know, Texas was trying to get the ball back late. You know, TCU kind of in their 4-minute drill, you know, had a third down. I think it was a 3rd and 6. And Barron just, you know, allowed Quentin Johnson to push him past the sticks and was able to catch a really easy slant route to convert that first down. And, you know, in that situation, you know, you have to be playing sticky in coverage. You can't give up inside leverage. You certainly can't allow him to get, you know, within a yard of the sticks without, you know, driving on the football before it's thrown. So, you know, just a lack of situational awareness, you know, maybe a little bit of a breakdown in technique there. But for as well as Barron played in that game, you know, that's a play where, you know, he has to be in position and give himself a chance to break that pass up. And, you know, Texas might have had a chance, you know, for a remarkable comeback, you know, maybe send the game into overtime, you know, see what happens. But that was, you know, after he had made that fumble recovery and scored, that was, you know, really the big chance for Texas, you know, to really, you know, pull a game out of the dumpster there late.
So putting this loss into perspective, before the season, you said 8-4 is on the table. You'd probably take it. If you're going to say you're going to lose to number 4 TCU, a top 25 Oklahoma State team, you'd probably take it. Now, having said that, is it fair to believe that, Westcott, despite how ugly and how maybe even pathetic these losses have been?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if there's any, maybe the Alabama
all
game.
Losses, you can argue the Texas should have won.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the post-game win expectancy in the TCU game was for Texas. I would think it was extremely low, you know, given the lack of success offensively. So I don't know that there's ever, you know, I guess the Alabama game was maybe the rare loss that, you know, felt like a little bit of a moral victory for a lot of people. You know, I think, you know, when you look at it, if I think the full assessment of the season, you know, it's really going to depend on whether Texas can win these last two games, games that Texas should win, games that they need to win, you know, to be able to build some momentum. I think, you know, winning those games will have some, you know, impact on recruiting, a big missed opportunity in that regard with, you know, even a lot, you said, you know, a lot of kids from Texas, some national kids as well, including the nation's top tight end, Deuce Robinson. But I, you know, I think when I look back on the most frustrating losses, I mean, you know, extremely high post-game win expectancy, over 98% against Texas Tech, a team that, you know, played a good game against Kansas last weekend. Otherwise, hasn't been very good since they beat Texas. Oklahoma State has certainly cratered with that shoulder injury of Spencer Sanders, really hurting them. You know, so those were two games that Texas, you know, really needed to win. You know, I think, you know, close in the Alabama game and just, you know, didn't play well on offense against TCU. And I mean, that was a deserved result, you know, for the Horned Frogs with how they played defensively.
Yep. Yeah, TCU, an incredible win for them when you put it into perspective, too. On the road, night game, really cold, great atmosphere for Texas to go in there and win it right after being ranked number 4, despite being a touchdown underdog. That's a big win for Sony Dykes. And looking at the post-win expectancy, it looked like pregame it was 73%, Westcott. And Texas still had a 51% win probability with 7 minutes left to go in the third quarter. But after Texas had the punt from their own 46-yard line. That's when it flipped to TCU's favor and stayed TCU.
Yeah, certainly, you know, an opportunity for Texas. You know, that touchdown run by Miller was huge with the inability of Texas to really move the football. You know, if they can get him on the ground that play, then, you know, they're in a position to, you know, with some of the offensive adjustments that they made, you know, I thought that there were, you know, some missed opportunities for Quinn Ewers in the red zone, a little bit, you know, relying on Jatavion Sanders as a security blanket and not really, you know, going through his progressions. There's a wheel route to Bijan Robinson, you know, when they kicked the field goal on that drive. And then there was, you know, he tried the fourth down, you know, late when they didn't end up scoring, he kind of threw it up to Sanders in the end zone. And if he had, you know, gone to his next read, you know, Worthy was breaking open in the back of the end zone. So, you know, some misses there in progression for Quinn Ewers. We have seen him be able to go through his progressions, but, you know, I think, you know, when you see that type of predetermination late in the game, I think, you know, it just goes down to his lack of confidence and just, you know, letting the game get away from him a little bit mentally.
These last two games are big for both Ewers and Sark. I think Texas fans want to see some improvement going forward. Any other thoughts before we wrap up, Wes Scott?
Yeah, I think if you look across the country, you know, Drake May is playing at, you know, an incredible level for North Carolina. I mean, that guy's a legitimate superstar. But, you know, when you go down the list of other quarterbacks that are either redshirt freshmen or true freshmen, there aren't very many that are contributing. You know, really, you know, less than, you know, a handful who are contributing at the level that Quinn Ewers is. And, you know, certainly with, you know, all of the accolades and the recruiting rankings and you know, all of the talent that's so obvious, Ewers doesn't really fit in the same category as some of these other quarterbacks. But just for other kids who are, you know, in his age group, you know, what he's doing is still, you know, better than what most of the quarterbacks around the country who are his age are accomplishing right now. So, you know, I think that's something to keep in perspective as he goes through struggles as a young quarterback.
Yeah, one guy I think you can kind of compare him to would be Jalen Milroe, Alabama. And he struggled a lot early on. And obviously Bryce Young is back, but when he was filling in, he had a lot of turnovers, a lot of freshman mistakes. And there is growing pains with Ewers, no doubt. And just going to have to, you know, work through it. Well, Westcott, I think that covered pretty much everything from Saturday's game. We'll be back to preview the Kansas Jayhawks on Wednesday. Guess we'll see you then, boss.
Cheers.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.